Hello there, it is Phil Parr, and once again, as usual, I've forgotten to start my stopwatch. We're going to get right into it, because I think we've probably got more than an hour's worth of material to cover today. Let's introduce to you a fellow from Florida that you may have heard of. You'll want to hear of him when this hour is over. His name is Mike Calvo. Mike, welcome to Blind Like Me, sir.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Weather's great. It's about 60. And
It's actually warmer there than it is here. I'm in Orlando, Florida, and it's down into the 40s today. So it's a crazy day here.
I have noticed that Floridians have a rather superior attitude about their weather to us plebeians. Who have you? Is that taught by the Chamber of Commerce, or how do you get that?
You know, the weather is just so fickle here in Florida that if you just stick around for a little while, it'll change. Tomorrow, for example, the high is going to be 72, day after 75, and by Sunday we'll be at 80 degrees. So please don't send me hate mail.
I went to Disney World in Orlando. Is it Disney World? It is Disney World in Orlando in September, and it was ungodly hot. It was horribly hot. It was stay in the room and drink pina coladas hot. So I did that instead of wandering around. All right, Mike, what is your level of vision? Do you have any vision at all?
They don't work.
They just don't work,
I ain't got no vision.
I actually
ain't got no sight. I got plenty of vision, but no sight.
did they ever work?
Yeah, they did, actually. I was able to see until I was about 18. But even then, I was a little bit beyond light perception. I could see colors. I could see people's faces, things of that nature.
But nothing that really mattered. I mean, you couldn't drive. You couldn't – it's nothing like that.
I saw some very – very pretty young ladies, so as a teenager, so you know my memories are quite fond of that. So I guess it's funny because my wife and I have a standing joke where I tell her, well, the last time I saw an unclothed female was visually was when I was in my teens.
Oh.
And so my memories are of young. Young, hard bodies.
I got you.
You know, and she says, "Well, that's me, honey."
That's me, honey.
Which is funny because we got five kids. You know, so it's like, so yeah, that's me. I'm still looking like I'm 17.
being totally blind, I've never met an ugly woman.
Amen.
They're all beautiful to me. I love every one of them. Anyway,
I agree.
That's neither here nor there. So you've been fighting or dealing with this blindness thing all your life. And you, when you were little, Mike, what did they do for schooling for you when you were 6, 7 years old?
Well, it's interesting because I come from a Hispanic home. My parents are Cuban. They came here in the 1960s.
Uh-huh.
And in my culture, there really isn't a lot of awareness as to what can be done with blind kids.
I imagine.
So my parents, of course, in Cuba, blind kids or blind people either play music for money or sell pencils or work in factories or what have you. It's not like here. So my parents didn't really know what to do, but they knew that they didn't want me to get caught up in that old stereotype. So my parents heard that Michigan School for the Blind was a good school for blind folks. So that's where we went. We went up to Lansing, Michigan, and I was born in Atlanta, Georgia, and We went to Lansing, Michigan, and I got my training at Michigan School for the Blind. Taught me how to cook, taught me how to, you know, sort clothes, and it's very cool what they do with us blinks sometimes when we're kids, because we get to do certain stuff that even my own kids haven't gotten to do yet. You know, we get to go out and work with tools, and they start with that whole teaching us how to use saws and drills, and we used to go out. Drill holes in trees to get maple syrup at Michigan School for the Blind. So it was just very cool stuff. And by the time I was about 6 or 7, we went back to Cuba. I mean Miami, and we kind of lived there until I moved here to Orlando about 6 years ago. I've moved back and, you know, throughout different parts of the country on and off as I've grown up, but just on my own adventuring place. I live in New York and stuff for a while. But by and large, I was raised in Miami and went to school there and got mainstreamed almost immediately when I got there.
Did you say you were born in Cuba? Or?
No, I was born in Atlanta.
You're born in Atlanta. Well, that's a long way from Cuba. Miami, I understand, is predominantly Cuban now.
It was. It is not any longer. Miami has a lot of Cuban population, but Miami has truly become the melting pot not only of the United States, but of South America and Central America. They've got everything. And unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to look at it, Hispanics are a very proud people who really insist on keeping up their culture. And as somewhere along the line, people need to tell us folks, hey, wake up, you're in America, and we do things, that's why we call it the melting pot. Yeah. Everybody brings what they got in, and we mix it. It's not anybody. That's how you get, that's how you get turkey wraps. or you get restaurants like the Greek Jalapeno, which is owned by a friend of mine, you know, because in America, we just mix everything, and it's a wonderful combination of things. Don't worry so much about preserving your culture so much as you are an American now. You know, and so Miami has definitely diversified a bit from that. But folks like myself that do feel that we really want to stay in America, we've kind of moved out of there and let that whole situation sort itself out.
But I bet the food and music scene in Miami is wonderful.
Oh yeah, it is. It's a great. Don't get me wrong. It's a great place to visit. The people are very loving. And there is quite a bit of crime in Miami for several reasons. You're just getting folks that are in the transitionary period. It's a port town, so you know you get any issues that you've gotten with port towns throughout history.
Yeah.
You know, it's a wonderful place to go. The food is excellent. The culture is excellent. The music is awesome, and I really enjoyed my years growing up there. And I truly enjoy going back from time to time, with the exception of the traffic. That even though I don't need to drive through it, I still have to sit through it, and it's awful.
Yeah, somebody has to drive you through it, so you're affected by it. When you got through with school, you're through with your high school. What did you think? What were your aspirations? What did you think you could do, Mike?
I actually dropped out of high school.
Uh-huh.
I started because my parents didn't know what to do with a guy like me. They didn't know what to do with a blind person. And not to mention the fact that I've been a rebel all my life. I mean, I've always had that rebellious streak in me to do what I wanted to do over and above everybody else's. And the more somebody tells me I couldn't do something, the more I refuse to accept that and would do it myself. I opened up my own business when I was 13 and as a DJ, and started working in clubs and all kinds of other stuff as a blind, because they have something called the Performers Act. So if you've got a gimmick, which mine was blindness, of course, you ever notice how sighted people always think that we do? We're just so amazing. We do everything so awesome, even if we do it kind of, sort of good.
Yeah, that you can do anything is amazing too.
Oh, yeah, you know. But so I would get into clubs working under the Performers Act. But at the same time, grew up in Miami in the 80s, and the 80s offered a lot for a young entrepreneurial spirit, both on the legal and the illegal sides of the law. So I got heavily involved in the gang banging and drug activities that were involved in Miami in the 80s, just as a teenager. And probably got saw a lot of as I tell people, I've stood in front of more and stood in front and behind of more guns than I care to think about.
Really?
And it is it was a crazy time in my life. I grew up in my parents were good folks. I never saw my father take a drink. I never saw my father smoke a cigarette. I mean, never took a drug in his life. My parents worked very hard for what they got there. People say, well, you know, you're a product of your environment. No, I was actually raised in a very steady, very middle class, hardworking, blue collar parents environment. Yeah. I just was a rebel, man, and I just wanted to go out and party and do dope and, you know, mess around with as many women as humanly possible. And at the same time, I was okay in school, but I was bored in school because I ran up into something in school called a bureaucracy. And I didn't understand a bureaucracy. Yeah. I didn't know what it was, but I just knew that I didn't want to have any part of it. It was an interesting thing because as a mainstream kid, you're dealing with these people that were itinerant teachers, and they would come in, and I truly had some great itinerant teachers, and I had some really awful ones. And a couple of the awful ones hit me, or one of the awful ones hit me in particular in my senior year in high school, where they didn't order my books on time. Because, you know, to get Braille books done at the time, you had to order them a year in advance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And this isn't the case now that kids face, of course, because they've got PDAs and computers and stuff like that.
We've got the internet now, yeah.
Yeah, I used to use, I mean, my big thing was a slate and stylus and a tape recorder, you know.
Yeah.
Or Perkins Brailler, you know.
Yeah.
Do you know they actually give the kids now, they give them assistants, they give them like a person that like goes through school with them during the day?
Oh, that's a sign of our times, and maybe that's good. I wouldn't want a person to go through. I wouldn't like that at all.
Well, yeah, but you're an adult now, so you know what strings are attached to that. But if you're but when you're a kid, I mean, I can honestly say I would have loved to have had somebody there that could read to me on demand and that kind of thing, because the teachers didn't know how to deal with a blind person, and they really didn't have the time or the inclination or the motivation to do so. There were some, but then, you know, smart Alex like me to deal with, and I was just a smart Alec. I was just potty mouth blind kid.
Couldn't help
that
it. Yeah.
Thought he knew the world and really. I'm sure that's very surprising.
Yes, it is.
It was really a matter of saying, you know, look, kid, you know, you think you know so much. Well, here you go. Do it your own way. So my attitude, I'm sure, I'm all for people with strong characters. I promote it in my kids, all my kids. I got five kids, and my kids are very strong-willed. My kids are very independent. I homeschool, and my kids are all self-directed. You know what I'm saying? So it's an amazing thing to watch. But at the same time, unfortunately, kids like that, people like that, you got to just point them at a brick wall and say, "Go, run as fast as you can. Go, there you go." You know, and let them run into that.
But blind people who are like you are and like I was seem to be, to me, more able to deal with the world and are more successful because they wouldn't take no for an answer.
That's true. But there's a fine line between doing that and ending up with a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah.
And I can honestly tell you I crossed over that line.
Yeah.
As I got older, and this did not happen right away because I was involved in the music industry. I was involved in the street merchant industry. I was involved in things where basically you were as good as the product you were delivering. You know what I'm saying? And it was you were really, school didn't mean anything to me. I could do stuff when I had the proper materials. I could fly through a math class. You know, I could do long division in my head. I could do multiplication in my head.
Still can.
It was just a matter of my teacher. One of my teachers later told me, she said, I knew when you'd come to school stoned when you couldn't do long division in your head. So you were high that day.
And another thing is state agencies don't deal well with people like you and me. They can't handle us. They don't know what the hell to do.
Well, the thing is that, what really would be a good thing for people like you and I to do is to learn how to work the system instead of work against the system. And I think that of course comes with age, and like you wouldn't have somebody taking you around now because you know the strings that were attached. Even though then you feel like a lone ranger.
Yeah.
I met a couple of blind people when I was a kid, Phil, that were freaky, man. I didn't know them. They were very strange. They would rock. They would poke their eyes. They would pick their behinds. They smelled. It was very strange. And it was their parents. But I didn't know that. I didn't know that it was that their parents didn't know how to, to this day, I got five kids. I don't know what I would do if one of my kids was born blind, because even as a parent, I would not feel necessarily equipped.
Yeah.
So, but of course, as a kid, you just say, I don't want to hang around those weird blind people. And then of course, I would ride the weird people bus.
Yeah, that's good, and that's good. But of course, there are sighted kids that pick their nose and do stupid things also.
We don't know that.
Now, but when did you say you grew up basically in the 80s. When did your interest in computers begin to manifest itself?
Well, I got introduced to computers through music, you know, doing music programming and writing dance tracks and stuff. And in 1989, 1988, a very, very pretty young lady walked into my recording studio, and in late 1987 or so, walked into my recording studio, and we started working together. And in 1989, this young lady became pregnant and became my wife. And I don't know how that happened, but she was a very nice lady, and unfortunately was in for quite a turbulent life with someone like myself, who was basically a rebel without a cause. But all my life, I really kind of wanted to be good, but it was so much more fun to be bad, if you know what I mean. So when I saw that I had a kid coming, I said, I got to get right. I got to do the right thing.
So you had a little studio back in the 80s, a little recording, audio recording studio on tape, on that old archaic tape recorders and things like that.
We used to do A-track digital, and then we went digital. So we used to do a sync. We used to sync the A-track to the MIDI system, to the computer, and so we would be able to get. We had about 64 virtual tracks, so it was a dance studio, a dance music studio. But I dropped out of high school because they didn't order my books right. Right back in 80 in 80.
Oh, okay. This teacher didn't order the book, so you just said, "Hell with it. I'm leaving. I'm out of here."
Well, they told me that I would have to work three times as hard. Ever since I was a little kid, Phil, I had been hearing this three times as hard crap about, you were born with a strike against you, and this is from people that were quote unquote supposed to be in. They were supposed to be there for my betterment, but they may have been, they were kind of leveling with me and being straight in your face. They saw I was an in your face sort of person. So I guess they thought that they'd give me a couple of doses of reality. But what it did was it made me even madder. You know, because I would sit there and say, man, you know, I want the same things that other people want. I want to have kids. I want to have a wife. I want to go to school. I want to have a career. I wanted to actually, even though I was a rebel and stuff, the law intrigued me. I wanted to become a lawyer.
Yeah.
But I became such a hater of the system.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Of the system.
Yeah.
And because the system put burdens on me to make itself better, you know, to make itself easier. They made, you know, here my parents couldn't advocate for me because, you know, they were Cubans, dude. They didn't speak a lick of language. They were trying, but
really?
They still would come in and try. And my dad had a, you know, my dad has a very, you know, fourth or fifth grade education or something, and, you know, whatever. And so every time he'd come in, he'd lose it. He'd be very angry, and, you know, he'd be the loudmouth Cuban. So it only took one or two of those incidents for me to say, you know, I won't tell mom or dad anymore.
The system is one size fits all. You go in, they send you to Arkansas to figure out what you can and can't do, and then they want to put you in a stand or they want to put you in some job that blind people traditionally do. I didn't want that, and so I didn't get involved in the system at all, and you didn't either.
Well, I did not until later, and so I you know, they wanted it. What ended up happening was I ended up, of course, failing the 12th grade, and the reason, one of the reasons, that I was making so much money as a DJ. I was making, when I was 16 years old, I was making $40,000-$50,000 a year. And just as a DJ, and they're telling me, well, you better go to school and you better get a diploma, because if not, you're not going to get a worthwhile job. Dude, I got a worthwhile job now.
Mike, I'm hearing your mic is moving. Or your mic is cutting. I mean, it's not cutting in and out, but it's making a little staticky kind of a noise when you move it. That's much
better.
That is much better. So you got your wife, married her in 1989, and you began having children, and you were already fooling with computers. How were you able to make a living with a dance studio? Were you supporting?
No, I actually dropped out of the studio because I wanted to stop, you know, stop partying and stop doing this and stop doing that and really go get a job. So I went to go get a job at a bank, and I went to go work customer service at a bank and got further exposed to computers, and that's when I really realized that I never wanted to work for anybody again, because I went to go work at a bank where some dude came and set up my computer and left, and then they didn't know what else to do with me. Uh-huh. They didn't know at the bank. So my perspective or my prospects for career path were like nil.
Yeah.
So, you know, I decided one day I'd been there about 6 months, and I went to people have heard me tell this story before. I went to my boss and I said, so when do I get to be the president of this place, you know? And of course, I'd always been an entrepreneur, man. I wanted to know that, you know, when did I get my office, you know?
Yeah.
And you should have seen me, Phil. I had hair past my shoulders in a suit. You know, but I was already a freaky blind guy to begin with, so they didn't want to mess with me.
How did you get a job at a bank with long hair and all that? How did you get that job?
I was in collections.
Oh, okay.
I was in collections, so I was rough.
And I bet you were good at it.
Oh, I loved calling people on Saturday morning and just waking them up and making them pay their bills.
I talked to another guy whose father is president of a bank, and he's got his son in collections. I can't remember what this kid's name was, but he was kind of like us. He would be really good at it. I bet you were. I'm glad I didn't owe your bank money.
It was fun because people would get really bent out of shape, and I'd tell them, look, I didn't pull your name out of a hat, man. You earned the privilege of hearing my golden tones this morning, and if you don't want to hear me again, then I would suggest you get your butt out of that bed and write me a damn check and never get in this department again. Otherwise, I'll call you every Saturday morning until Jesus comes back. You know, and sorry about that.
That's all right. What did the president say when you said, when do I get to be president of this place?
Well, it was really interesting because, you know, they told me straight up, we don't know how to handle you people. We don't know what to do with you people. You know, some guy came in, he set up your computer, and that was it. you know, we don't know what you can do, what you can't do. So I called that guy up, a guy named Greg Luther, who is still my friend today. And I said, and I was almost in tears. I was very upset. I mean, I had an extra a real hard shell, but, you know, it wasn't – I was really trying to do right this thing, man. I was trying to be a good guy. I didn't want my kid to, you know, sit in school. And I had all these visions of my kid, you know, raising his hand in school and them saying, well, what does your daddy do? And he would raise his hand and say, well, my daddy's a doper, you know, or my daddy's, a you know, sitting on Social Security or something.
Oh, yeah,
It was really a bad trip with me when I had my – When my first son was born, I really took that responsibility very seriously, and my life changed. The only time my life changed even more intensely than that was later, but it was for other things. But it was he made a huge impact on my life.
All right, so you called the computer guy and said,
I called the computer guy and I said, hey, man, this is what happened. And he said, well, Mike, the only way that you're going to ever be competitive is if you learn that computer inside out. You learn it like the palm of your hand, because behind that keyboard, you're an equal. You know.
And he was right. He was correct.
Yes, he was.
I don't care who he worked for. He was absolutely on the mark.
He worked for the Division of Blind Services in Florida. His name's Greg Luther, and he was an absolute wonderful man. So he introduced me to, or reintroduced me to, an excellent organization called Recording Books for the Blind, Recorded Books for the Blind. And I started learning, and through the wonderful assistance of this organization, who is so, has been so invaluable in many blind people's education. They recorded manuals, computer manuals for me, things on DOS, things on programming, things on how to write software, you know, how to write, how to program, the terminal emulation packages I was working with. And I learned how to make things work better.
Uh-huh.
At that time at my job, they had a blind productivity rate and a normal employee productivity rate. That's exactly how it was written.
Really?
Yes.
That's terrible.
And, it's so politically incorrect. But I said, well, if I'm going to be abnormal, then I'm going to be abnormal to the plus. You know, the blind productivity rate was about 25 calls an hour, and the normal employee productivity rate was about 30 calls an hour.
Oh, yeah?
So I, through the use of software and text to speech, where I would hit a key on my keyboard, it would pick up the line and out dial through a modem, and then connect the person to my headset and speak the person's name and how much they owed and when their last payment was, all at like 100 gazillion words a second.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to bring up the speed for us us abnormal employees to 40 calls an hour,
which exceeded sighted world's
rate. 33%, dude.
Yeah, so, I love it.
So they saw how good their little Blink was doing, so they wanted another one. So they went and they got another Blink, and I started training him, and we worked together, and we trained him, and him and I would bounce back and forth between Employee of the Month, and this is a guy out of the Miami chapter of ACB, a guy named Jesus Garcia.
And you're still friends with Jesus? Is he still around?
I've seen Jesus throughout the years. He's a great guy. He's a very nice man. And so Jesus and I, we would work at this bank, and then this other blind guy who's passed away since, a guy named Glenn, came to work there. And between Jesus and I, we trained Glenn, and he was, you know, doing the abnormal productivity rate thing too, you know.
Yeah.
And so at one point, and one day Greg calls me up and says, hey, Mike, I need you to go down to Ryder Trucks, and I need you to do a presentation for me. And I said, I've never done a presentation in my life. He said, well, here's your point. Here's your chance to get your foot in the door, kid. He said, I need to go in, and I need you to go and connect to their mainframe and show the managers there that it'll work, and answer any questions they have about accessibility. There's a blind guy whose job depends on it.
Okay, all right.
So I said, all right. I said, so how much you paying?
Yeah.
And he said, we'll pay you a whopping $75 a day. I said, well, listen, I'm making $13,500 a year here, so, you know, okay.
I'll do it.
I'll do it. So I got set up, and I went in, and I'll tell you, Phil, that there was the first time I ever got to speak to a group of managers, and I'll never forget the one thing that I walked in there and said to them, and it got a laugh, but somebody walked up to me later and said, you know, you talked about the elephant in the room. And that was, I walked in, I said, now, I can come in here and I can talk about productivity and I can talk about connecting to your mainframe and everything, but I know that you people are looking at me and say, how is he such a sharp dresser and who matched his clothes this morning?
You know, which is absolutely true. How was he actually able to get here, dress himself and get here?
You know, how does he go to the bathroom at break time?
Yeah.
And I said, now we're going to, I said, let's talk about that. Let's talk about if you hire, and basically it was a little motivational speech, which I was not called to do, but they ended up hiring a guy who ended up staying there when I got out of computers in 1992 and took a hiatus until 1997, where I went back, and actually my first job back in computers was at Ryder. 93, I got out.
Let's hurry along. What did you do for those 5 years when you were out of computers? Just real quickly.
Remixing. Went back to music.
Okay.
Went back to hustling.
By then, were we recording on computers by then or not? I guess not.
We were not. We were not in my studio. We were still recording on hard drives and on ADATs and things like that. So,
yeah.
So I went back. That started a company that basically put over 400 blind people to work in the next few years. On both on the Fed level and on the state level. Greg gave me just a lot of work here in Florida, and I started expanding out into Tennessee and North and South Carolina and Alabama, and did some work for the Fed. I put blind people to work at Alamo Rent-A-Car, American Express, FedEx. I put the first Pizza Hut that a blind person ever worked at, that was my placement. First talking gas station. There's a gas station out in Birmingham, Alabama, that the blind guy, I actually set up the whole system so where the blind guy could take the money and run the credit card machines and run the pumps.
Really?
And make them talk and all that stuff. And I was into going into companies and developing a career path so that no manager could ever say, well, we don't know what to do with you people ever again.
We can't hire a blind person because we don't think he can do the work. Were you working for the federal government, the state government, or what?
I did work for the state and for the Fed.
Yeah.
And it was, again, it was just a twisted thing. I ended up having a lot of trouble at home. I got divorced. I got divorced in 1995. She had had enough of me, and understandably so. It was I was just crazy.
Really?
It just got to be crazy. With never got hooked on drugs, but you know, never stopped partying, never stopped. You know, I just after the Clinton administration screwed around with the monies that went to VR, which they did back in the early 90s, and VR basically started running out of money to give computer consultants work at the time. Even though we were like at $40 an hour, we were never. In my era doing computer work, we were never at the 110, 120, 75, 80 bucks an hour that current computer guys make now. I'll never forget, I went to Ryder Trucks in 97 after I didn't know what to do. In 1995, I became a Christian and really had to stop living the life that I was living and didn't know where I was going to go at that point. Wasn't working on the same kind of music I was working on before, wasn't doing the things I was doing, and I just kind of floundered for about a year and a half, wondering what I was going to do, and ended up back in computers. And ended up working in, got remarried in 1997, and got a job at doing Ryder Trucks, which ended up in 9 months of steady work, but it was never at anywhere near the amount of money that computer people are worth today or were even worth at the time. So did that, and in 1999 fell in love with the internet, man. I found the internet in 97 and started screwing around with it and got trained as a JAWS scripter and all that stuff, and in 1999 I put out a product called the Radio Webcaster, which was basically an offshoot of a little transmitter I used to use to listen to internet audio, but to sit next to my beautiful new wife on the couch while she watched Baywatch, which I couldn't stand.
What did this thing do? What was it?
It just transmitted audio from the PC, man, to an FM radio.
So it was like what you buy from Sea Crane now, or like the iRock transmitter.
Right, but the thing is that mine had a remote control. We used an RF remote control that would work through walls, and it would connect back to the PC, and had a piece of software that would you'd flip through the channels, and it would tell you the name of the station, and back through your headphones, and you could run it totally headless. You know what I'm saying? And that was really the first product that we sold it for $150, didn't market it to blind people, but a bunch of blinks started buying it, and I would
love to have had one. That's like they make a thing called a Wi-Fi radio now that does, I guess, virtually the same thing.
Yeah, and when that Wi-Fi radio was when I saw that coming on the horizon, I said, you know, it's time to get out of this business. Yeah. And at that point, Freedom Box, did I say that?
I think you did, but maybe they won't hear you. Maybe we'll call it.
But that F word
box.
I'm being facetious. I am not forbidden from using the word.
Well, you got sued. We'll talk.
Well, yeah. So we basically agreed to disagree in that whole situation. So just felt both companies felt that it was just better to just let sleeping dogs lie. We walked away from the brand. We feel more comfortable with our brand now that the word freedom had certain negative aspects to it anyway. So
yeah,
we just said that it was a better thing to agree to disagree and just walk away. So we all settled.
At some point in time, you decided to go on your own and get away from jaw scripting and writing other people's stuff to doing your own.
Well, it was funny because the blind people that were buying Radio Webcaster kept asking me about what we were going to do about web accessibility. I said, I didn't know a damn thing about web accessibility. I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I started learning about it, one day I'm sitting in my computer, and I get an email from, you know, I figured I had an idea for a piece of software, but I wasn't a programmer, and nobody would take my money in America. And I get an email from some Russian guys who said that they would do a prototype for me. And they did do the first Freedom Box prototype, which is voice controlled and stuff.
Yeah.
And in 2001, we ended up releasing the product for the first time. And then we got Matt Campbell to kind of work it more here in the U.S. And it's just been history ever since. We're turning six this year, and as you know, we've done a screen reader. We're offering a free screen reader that we just made available absolutely free. There's no strings attached, no gimmicks. We just believe that accessibility is a right for people. So we put our money where our mouth was, and we created a foundation that will focus specifically on giving this screen reader away. What other companies consider their bread and butter, we said, well, we just believe it's the right thing to do to create this thing, and we'll sell other things. We sell web services and things like that, and that's where our money comes in. And people still pay for the actual licensed version. Yeah, a lot of people use the free one, but people actually still pay for the real one. We're experiencing more sales now than ever. So, you know, but I digress. I just kind of fell into this thing. I really didn't set out to compete with anybody. I don't consider any of the current adaptive technology companies my competitors. I would never insult them with that. Simply because how could I, who am I to come against companies that have been here for 20 years, you know, or whatever, and say to them, I'm better than you. No, we have a very active blog at our company, and one of the things I wrote recently was I wrote a post called "On the Shoulders of Giants," and I truly, honestly believe that people like Doug Joffrey, Ted Henter, these guys are giants in our industry. How dare I ever come along and say that they've done it wrong? I may not agree with some of the current positions that those companies are doing, although I think that GW Micro's latest release of WindowEyes with the scripting is genius, to say the least. It's ingenious, to say the least, and people should really give that product another look for a totally customizable solution. But I really believe that we are a different kind of company than what you've seen from either GW Micro or Henter Joyce or Freedom Scientific or whatever.
Over the years that we've been doing this show 4 years and doing Handyman 6 years, I have been very critical of both companies, not so much GW Micro because I don't use Windows, I use JAWS. It just amazes me that my software to read the screen on my computer costs about twice as much as the computer. There's something wrong with that.
Well, it's like this, and this is it may seem funny for some people to hear me defend Freedom Scientific because of our history. But let me tell you, if you're a big heavy person, if you weigh 350 pounds, and you're used to sitting down and eating a huge plate of food for every meal. When a little skinny guy comes along that weighs 100 pounds and he can eat a quarter of what you eat and still produce as much as you do in software, if not more, when it comes to features and things like that, it's very difficult to slim down. Losing weight is something that this country deals with every day.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing for corporate infrastructure. It's very – I mean, yes, I'm as constructively a critical consumer as any other blind person. And I believe that all of us as blind people need to hold adaptive technology companies' feet to the fire and say, what are you going to do for us next? But at the same time, you know, this is a huge company, folks. This is a company that doesn't just face the problems here in the U.S. They face international issues, and not to mention the fact that, for example, Serotech, we have the luxury of saying, hey, we're not going to do anything, for example, from Office 2003 backwards. No, we don't do it. We don't do anything else besides XP. We don't do anything else but, Office 2007, and we don't give you a scripting language. So we pick and choose where we're going to go. These guys have decided to say, we've got the flexibility to do it all. So when you do everything, you can't do anything right, as far as I'm concerned. You got to focus in on where you're going to go. And I think that that's important today in computing. But remember, as these companies were growing up and as people like me were using them to start my company, because I have no doubt that I would not be where I am today were it not for Henter Joyce and JAWS. Okay.
Yeah.
And back earlier than that, were it not for Doug Joffrey and for Vocalize. Okay.
Yeah.
I would not be who I am today had these people not gotten out there and done the hacking and hooking that needed to be done. So do I believe their products need to be in it more inexpensive? Yes. How they're going to do that, I don't know. I know how we're doing it. We're addressing a new market segment that we believe is emerging from the marketplace. But these guys got the added problem of feeding their current market segment. They don't have the luxury that we have of saying, okay, we don't want a JAWS customer. And we truly don't. We don't care if JAWS customers come to us or not. We don't care if GW Micro customers come to us or not. Our products work just as well with GW's products as they do with JAWS, because we want to enhance your user experience. We don't care if you've got two or three screen readers sitting on your computer.
Okay, but I know a guy who's using your screen reader, who was a JAWS user up until 6 months ago, who says that yours is as good as anybody's.
Well, and that depends on what he's doing. You know, if you're looking at going...
I'm losing you for some reason. Your mic is...
Sorry about that. Is that better?
That's better. I'll pull you up a little bit. Go ahead.
So if you're looking to customize, if you're looking at going into a, you know, a situation with terminal emulation and all of these different types of things that are legacy, we're not what you want. But if you want Word, if you want, you know, go pick up any PC magazine, look at the top 25 programs on that PC magazine. We're going to work with them. We're going to work with the majority of them.
Yeah.
You want social networking? We're going to work with that. You want good web access? We're going to work with that. You want accessibility on the go from wherever you are, from a computer? We're going to do that. What we're doing is we're doing things that the other guys just aren't doing. We do Ajax out of the box. We don't just do one flavor of Ajax. We do Ajax with Microsoft Ajax. We do Google Ajax. And we do Yahoo Ajax. We don't just do one flavor. You know what I'm saying? And so it depends. And the beauty of what's happening in the marketplace right now and where you know, certain companies in this industry that are losing market share to other companies need to get a grip is that doesn't matter, folks. Just start to learn to diversify. Learn to understand that there are millions of older folks that need software and need services coming into this market in the next couple of years. And if you keep your head, you know, in the past, you're going to lose track of what's going on in the future.
You're a screen reader that you still sell a screen reader, but you also give one away. The one you sell does more than the one you give away. Is that a given?
No, sir.
Huh?
Not true.
No.
Nope.
Not true?
Not true.
Why would
nope.
anybody buy your screen reader if you're willing to give it to them?
Well, because of this. It's two reasons.
Yeah.
First of all, every time you bring up our free screen reader, you got to be connected to the internet.
Okay.
Okay. So the first thing is, you know, you got to get your computer on. You got to get it up and running. You gotta,
okay.
Then you got to log on to the internet and bring up the screen reader. If you don't have internet, you don't have a screen reader.
Because it's stored. It's on the internet. It's not on your computer.
Correct. And the purpose, the true market that SA2Go is here to serve is the blind person that needs occasional throwaway accessibility here in the States. So if you come over to, you know, your Aunt Bessie's house and you're going to use her computer and you want to be able to use it, but you don't want to have to install a darn screen reader,
yeah,
you can just go get SA2Go and use it. Okay. But more than guys like that, the people that we want to access are blind people in developing countries that are using public computers just like the mainstream in coffee shops, in libraries, in schools, that they don't have home computers. But we want them to be able to have – we want to give the same level of access to accessibility as Google gave to search.
Okay, but you'd have to have someone get you on the internet before you could use the screen reader.
No, not at all. All you got to do is hold the Windows key down, press R, and it brings up the run dialog. Type in www.sa2go.com and press enter. If you're a touch typist, you're going to be able to do that.
That means if you have no screen reader, if I turn my screen reader off and I wanted to try yours to see if it would work, that's all I'd have to. Hold down the Windows key. Run through that sequence again.
Okay. Hold down the Windows key.
Okay.
Tap the R.
All right.
Okay. For run.
Okay.
What'll happen is on the screen, it'll bring up the run dialog, and you can type in www.satogo.com, press enter. And within about 10 seconds, it'll start to talk.
You got a screen reader.
And it'll play it'll play a message for you. Press enter.
Yeah.
Okay? You press enter, and what it'll do is then it'll bring up the run that Windows security dialog that IE brings up.
That you have
and
to have,
we,
yeah.
And we speak, and we say press Alt-R to continue. You press Alt-R, and then when it's done and it's ready to open, we tell you again, we say press Alt-R again to continue. Okay, you press Alt-R, and it's not installing anything. What it's doing is it's bringing down a little executable into the Windows, or the IE temp folder.
Okay.
That's running right there, and what it is, it's a very small footprint of our software that's full featured, and it starts to run. And if you at that point, it'll run and it'll be fine, but you have to set your speed, your pitch, all that stuff. If you register for free, you can save your settings, and of course we give you the option to opt in and get, you know, and get our shameless advertising.
Yeah,
or if you don't want to do that, you can opt out for that. But we do that, and then it'll save your settings. So every time you go to a computer, you can just type in your account number and your PIN, and it'll bring down your settings. And, of course, every time you do that, you're going to start to – it's a consumer's natural curiosity to go and look and see what the heck the company does besides that.
Yeah.
And we're going to sell you remote access. We're going to sell you, you know, the same screen reader can be installed from the get-go on computers. We sell it for $499, so we're significantly less than the other guys. We have web services. We have a whole network of web services that provide things like audio, you know, described video, and access to over 4,000 or 5,000 radio stations, news from 130 different countries, a bunch of different web services that you can buy. We just announced the ability to download a lot of our content to the Victor Stream. So really what we're trying to do is give people a compelling reason to buy our web services that just so happen to work in conjunction with our screen reader. To us, the screen reader is a throwaway. It's just kind of the vehicle we need for you to ride. The way I describe it is we look at our technology kind of as a tree, where the root of the tree is accessibility anywhere.
Okay.
The trunk of the tree is our screen reader called System Access. And the reason we didn't pick JAWS or WindowEyes is because we can't influence their development path. Okay, so yeah. We need to be able to have our own screen reader that we can cater to whatever we need it to do. And then the branches, the trees, the branches and the leaves on our tree are all of our different web services. And we've been able to create quite a bit of web services that, and you're going to see more from us in the future, that will give us enough of a steady income monthly that we can keep giving you the screen reader for free. The whole purpose of this company, since it was started, was to be a by-the-month type of software as a service model. And what we've done is we've allowed people to buy our entire suite of products for $24.95 a month. And we announced that a little while back. So it's, you know, we still offer very, very compelling prices to veterans. We have a great veterans package that we've been selling hundreds of to the Veterans Administration. We've got good pricing for VR for people that are doing kind of the entry level secretarial and those types of jobs and jobs that require off the shelf products, off the shelf software. Our technology works very well. So there's a niche for us, but it is not – we're not – as you hear from listening to what I'm talking about, my mission and the GW Micro or Freedom Scientific mission are so at opposite ends of the spectrum from one another, they don't even compare.
There is a niche for you. You're going to have to create it. I think it's there. But you had to. It wasn't there until you started doing this. I mean, it's not that we're
creating it, really, Phil. What's happening is what we're doing is we're educating the blind consumer to say the sighted people are doing this. They've been doing this for years. You can do it too. You know what I'm saying? So it's not really that. All we're doing is informing people.
So what
and then
this
we're saying,
is,
and
this
by the
is,
way, we're not going to charge you a premium to do it either.
This is AOL for blind people.
This is more than that. This is AOL for blind people. This is Napster for blind people. This is Facebook for blind people. This is, and not only that, not that we recreate all those services, we give you access to them. We give you a simple, straightforward interface that you can interface with Facebook, with Napster, with MySpace, with Last.fm, with all of the, with, you know, XM Radio, all these different things. Go to Amazon.com even today with JAWS. And see how well it works on Amazon.com, and then go and take SA2Go for a spin on Amazon.com and see who comes out better.
Yeah.
And this isn't what we say. This is what magazine after magazine has said about our technology.
Well, this is what you know because you're not a blind person doing this.
That's what
needs to be. Blind things need to be developed by blind people because they understand what we need.
Well, you know, that statement, I agree with it in principle, Phil, but it's a slippery slope because I would submit that the whole reason that we are still dealing with $1,100 and $1,200 screen reader products is because we as a community have insisted on keeping it in-house. And management in the past has scared the bejesus out of mainstream companies from like Microsoft from even coming into this space for antitrust reasons. Microsoft could have developed a screen reader years ago.
For nothing. And have it on every computer.
But they didn't because there were factions in this marketplace.
Well, they didn't because they're in bed with Andrew Joyce.
Well, no, actually, history doesn't show that. What actually shows is that Henry Joyce, they bought Henry Joyce's OSM model, OSM years ago, and then management later at Henry Joyce said, hey, you know, we don't believe that Microsoft is going in the right direction for accessibility, and basically kind of said, we do it better than the CITES do it, so let us keep doing it. You see what I'm saying? So it really, when the CITES market looked at this market to get into it, yeah, we scared them away. We said, no.
I've got nothing against CITES people. I've had 3 CITES wives. I've loved every one of them. So, listen, we're down on time, as I knew we would be eventually. Give me in detailed email and website addresses to get a hold of you and your company, if you don't mind.
Sure. You can visit us on the web at www.serotech.com. That's SEROTEK.com. If you'd like to read about what we believe and what we just seeded a non-for-profit organization. What that means is we're paying for it until it can pay for itself, and then we're going to let it out there into the wild. We're not controlling it by any stretch of the imagination. Visit accessibilityisaright.org.
All right.
And there you can read about the free screen reader and what that means and what the AIR Foundation's mission is.
Right.
You can give us a call at 866-202-0520 in the United States. Outside the United States, call us at 612-246-4818. And, of course, drop us an email to info@serotech.com.
info@serotech.com. Mike, we're completely out of time. Go enjoy the Florida weather. Thank you, sir. I've enjoyed it. I'll let you know. It'll be a couple weeks before we run this, but I'll give you a shout when we do.
Cool. Thank you.
Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Wow, what a guy. Mike Calvo is that gentleman's name. And this screen reader is a serious thing. Don Shaw is using this screen reader, and he says it's comparable to Jaws. Does about everything Jaws does. I have not used it myself, so I do not know. Anyway, get a hold of Mike Calvo. Sounds like he has some interesting things. I think $24.95 will get you onto their network where you can buy, you can have a lot of download, a lot of movies and music and podcasts and things like that. So you might investigate. Anyway, come join us on Blind Like Me. We'd love to have you. My email address is philpar, P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R, all one word, at consolidated.net. consolidated.net. And you can call me 936-634-9500. That'd do it, huh? Come and join us on Blind Like Me. We'd love to have you. I think we're probably going to take spring break a week off next week. But we'll see you, if not next week, the week after on Blind Like Me.